All right, guys, welcome. I'm glad that you're here. If you're someone who is seeking uncommon results, this podcast is for you. Success, happiness, and wisdom. What do these words mean to you? I think we can all agree that we'll probably all have slightly different definitions of each. In these podcasts, I get to dive deeply into conversations with some amazing innovators, influencers, and trendsetters that have had different versions of how they define the terms, yet have come out on the other side with amazing, uncommon results. At some point in their lives, they have decided to unshackle themselves from the norm and go beyond all boundaries. All right, well, thank you again for joining another episode of Beyond All Boundaries. I'm John Dwyer, and I got an awesome guest today, Damon Remy, a good friend of mine. I've gotten to know Damon a few years ago, and he owns REI Black Book, which is an amazing company, and it's been in business for over 12 years. Very successful. Damon, welcome for welcome to the show, and thanks for being on, man.
I appreciate you having me, John. Look forward to kind of chatting and seeing what kind of nuggets we can provide your audience today.
That's right. So, Damon, why don't you talk about a little bit about, you know, where you started and your story, right? Because where you were and where you are today, it's a completely different chapter in your life. And I think that you've been through some amazing, you know, hurdles, and you've persevered to where you are today. And I'd love to kind of get just a background of where you started and kind of that journey that you've gone through.
Yeah, sure, man. I'm happy to share that. So I started off, it is a little bit important to the story. Started off small town, super small town, single mother. My dad was in and out of prison, you know, pretty much my entire life, and joined the military to kind of escape small town poverty and, you know, served 4 years in the Marine Corps, got an introduction to technology and absolutely fell in love with technology. I left high school thinking I wanted to be a CPA. Right. Oh. And I think a huge part of that was because, much like other folks, and I'm sure, you know, everybody could probably relate to this to some degree, when you don't know what you don't know, you just look to your environment and say, OK, who around me is having success? And I remember very, very vividly in my small little town, it was like there was a CPA and, you know, the wife and the 2.3 kids and the white picket fence and, you know, all that stuff. I was like, OK, well, if a CPA gets that, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a CPA. And, you know, of course, most CPAs go to the Marine Corps to get their training, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, long story short, man, I ended up in a very awesome opportunity and met a gentleman that he was my OIC. So he was my captain, my officer in charge. And his name was Captain Crisp. And he really introduced me to technology, and I basically had to support the technology for our accounting office, okay, in the Marine Corps. So I actually was a financial technician, technically, in the Marine Corps. They really do have those types of positions. It's not all grenades and handguns and, you know, all that stuff. Okay.
Well, you with the handgun and the grenade, I don't know, Damon. That's probably a good reason for that.
Well, trust me, man. I remember very vividly one time, man. I was at Marine combat training, because the one thing about the Marine Corps is everybody's a basic rifleman. And I remember the guy ahead of me, we actually literally was going throwing live grenades.
Yeah.
And the guy ahead of me basically dropped their grenade, man. And like everybody, like, I'm like, the intense
fear,
pressure of that situation going right. Next, oh. By the way, you know, it was pretty crazy. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got hurt. So, you know, that kind of gave me the introduction to technology, which really shaped my career. You know, here it is 20 something years later, right, and still focused on technology. Now, I stumbled into the mortgage business in the early 2000s. So back in the day when if you could fog a mirror, they would give you a loan. And if you couldn't fog the mirror, then they would probably fog it for you.
I mean, give you a loan, right?
Yeah. Right. It was pretty crazy days.
The liar loans, right?
Oh, dude, it was so easy. It really, truly was. I mean, I look back on those times, it was just absolutely easy. But even then, as it started tightening up, things started getting challenging. We pivoted as loan officers, as running a mortgage company. You know, we said, hey, look, we can't compete just on offering the lowest rate. Because the truth of it is, we all have access to the same sources of capital, the same sources of money. We're selling the same money. And so being, you know, offering the lowest rate, it's a race to the bottom, and it's not a differentiator in the marketplace, right? So you must have a differentiator. And so what we decided to do was to actually focus on real estate investors. We also focused on folks in bankruptcy as well. So we had two primary pillars of our business. And the real estate investing piece, we just ask ourselves a very simple question. Could we leverage my technology background, my love of marketing and technology at the end of the day, and could we help real estate investors do more deals? Could we help them find properties faster? And once they found them, could we help them flip them faster? And the faster we could do that, then the more frequently they would come back to us for additional capital and more loans. And that's how we monetized it. And that was really the early days of REI Blackbook, kind of the concept, even though I did not know at the time it was REI Blackbook, the concept, the tools and things like that really started in early 2003 and 2004.
So when you say things that you were processing things through, because you were working for a mortgage company. Is that true?
Yeah. I was basically an operations manager. I kind of ran the local, a local company, kind of a GM, if you will, but with a heavy, heavy emphasis focus on marketing and technology.
Okay.
So at that time, there's a couple of things that we were doing. We were shifting to more of a referral-based business as opposed to, you know, cold calling, smiling and dialing. There's a, you know, at that time rates were so low that everybody was just telemarketing, right? Just calling homeowners, hey, look, we've got super low rates. And we were starting to pivot to get in front of really three real estate agents, real estate investors, and bankruptcy attorneys. You know, so we were really focused on building a referral-based business. And although I didn't own the business, it wasn't my company, right. You know, I was kind of a GM. And I helped individual loan officers build their book of business, if you will. And we had, you know, a good book of business with real estate investors and a good book of business with bankruptcy attorneys. Because what most folks don't realize and understand is even though you filed bankruptcy, maybe you're in the middle of a Chapter 13, you actually can still qualify for good 30-year fixed FHA financing. Mm-hmm. And you got to get the court's approvals. It's a very specific niche. And we dove really deep to separate ourselves from other folks in the marketplace and then real estate agents. And we got referrals and loans from all of that, those things. And at the end of the day, it worked like gangbusters. Recognized, I had two loan officers that were, you know, top. They were recognized for the more transactions than pretty much anybody else in the country, top 50 in the country production wise. Life was rocking. We were making really good money and worked well until it didn't. And what happened was 2008.
Right.
Right. Just absolute collapse. And I remember vividly, man, we were closing over 100 loans a month. And, you know, to close over 100 loans a month, we've got several hundred in the pipeline, some with approvals, right? Some are already clear to close. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And like all of a sudden, these approvals that we have from these banks, you know, you turn on the news and next thing you know, the bank's closed.
Yep. Stop lending money.
It was, you know, just blood in the streets at the end of the day. It was pandemonium. And I was making a really good living. I was married, two kids at the time. I just had, my daughter was born December 27th, 2007. So I had this brand new baby. My four-year-old son, although we didn't know it at 2009, was diagnosed with a very rare brain disorder and had to have multiple surgeries. And so facing foreclosure, filed bankruptcy. I just happened to know a bunch of bankruptcy attorneys because that was a huge portion of our business. Forced to really file bankruptcy, save my house. And the economy was in the toilet as well, man. So it was a really difficult place. I had a pretty good professional background in technology and things like that, but it was difficult to just wake up and go throw your resume out there and go get a job.
Right.
And so I asked a simple question. And, you know, we had all of these individual kind of hodgepodge of tools to help real estate investors. And we asked a simple question. It was really out of desperation, to be very candid. It was like, man, you know, we knew that we couldn't provide financing to these real estate investors anymore. But at the same time, it was also, we knew it was going to be one of the best times to start buying houses.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
We asked a simple question. I wonder if real estate investors would actually pay for these software tools instead of just bringing us loans. What if they would actually just subscribe directly to the tools? And on October 1st, 2009, we sent out an email and a ringless voicemail. So people don't realize how long ringless voicemail has been around, but we sent a ringless voicemail out to all of our database here. And I'm from St. Louis. And we probably had a database of 1,500, maybe 2,000 people. We sent out emails, ring those voicemails, and basically just invited everybody to a party that we were having, a launch party, even though they didn't know it was a launch party. It was definitely a launch party. We told them we had some exciting news in the industry that was going to change the game, you know, but most importantly, we were going to give them free pizza and beer.
That's right. And they show up. And so, yeah. and you had that. And so you were designing the software during this time period.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. So we had built components, but they were just individual components, and things are a lot different today than they were even, you know, even a decade ago. Right. Which when I think of a decade doing this, it's crazy. But like, for instance, we had a Craigslist poster, like it would actually post so Craigslist at the time was limited to 4 pictures. Mm-hmm. And so, but they would allow you to post HTML. And so you can make these really pretty ad like Craigslist posts. And instead of our ads would show, instead of 4 pictures, they'd show 32 pictures. And they'd be, you know, it was literally like a mini web page inside of Craigslist. And we had built a simple tool to allow you to upload your property pictures, take that code, and then go post it to Craigslist. Right. So just simple things like that. John was like, you know, we had built an email tool so that you could, you know, scrape all of them. This is actually probably a little bit of black hat, but we would scrape all of the buyers. You know, you could go scrape. We built a tool. You could go and say, hey, I'm looking for all of Fixer Upper. So if the Craigslist ad has Fixer Upper, I want to go find their email address and then I want to send them an email. And so we built a lot of little bitty tools like that to help real estate investors. But you know, during those dark moments when I couldn't get a job, you know, I'm sending out my resume, but it really wasn't happening. And I just stepped back and said, okay, if I was going to build a company around this and sell a software, what would it look like? And that's whenever I sat down and really started creating the vision. And so that launch party, honestly, none of it existed except for the tools that we had already given away. And it was really, we bought everybody pizza and beer and we said, hey, look, man, here's the vision. And I presented for 4 hours, which I now know is a big no-no. I didn't know that, you know, it should be about a 90 minute to 2 hour presentation, but I basically pitched the vision. I said, hey guys, some of this exists today. A lot of it doesn't, but here's the deal. I'm looking for early adopters. And we created what we call a founders club. And so this was our way to raise capital. And we pre-sold the software. That's pretty common today.
Yeah.
That's pretty common today. I didn't certainly know that's what I was doing. Another very clear moment was whenever at the end of the 4 hours, we had about 400 people show up and we only were down about 150 people. Like people were like, dude, like, holy crap, long-winded dude, get to the point right. Kind of thing. And I stood up and I said, hey, here's the deal, $1,000 today and you'll never pay another subscription. And nobody moved. And I was like, crap, bankruptcy it is, foreclosure it is, probably moving in with my in-laws. I mean, and I'll never forget, gentleman's name is Ron Mink. He is a hard money lender today, but at the time he was in the very front row and he stood up and he waved his checkbook at me and said, what do we do? And that's when I was learned, hey, look, guess what? You also have to tell them what to do.
Right.
You have to have a clear call to action. And I told him, I was like, hey, get up, go to the back of the room, get signed up, guys, $1,000. And 49 other people stood up with him and walked to the back of the room. And we raised $50,000 that night. So that was October 1st, 2009.
And keep going. Go ahead.
Yeah, that was the seed capital, man. That was the seed capital that I said, hey, look, here's the vision. And I took that $50,000. I literally went and put it in an escrow account. I went and hired a developer. Just happened to be my wife's cousin. I said, hey, man, I promise you I can pay you 50 grand for the next 12 months. He was making about 40 grand at the time. He was fresh out of college, but he was a really, really smart kid. And I put that $50,000 in escrow basically and said, that's your money.
Wow.
And so I still didn't have money, by the way. I still was struggling to pay my bills.
Talk about reinvesting in your company though, right?
Yeah, right out of the gate, man. Right out of the gate. And you know, the only thing that I had to do, I remember this very vividly. He's like, okay, man, but I really want a new MacBook. If you can buy me a MacBook, I'm like done.
Yeah.
Done. So well, yeah, that's how we started, man.
That's really, so he was your first employee.
Very first employee, which is actually very pivotal. He's still with me today.
Yeah.
Very, very pivotal. Because I will tell you, man, things happened really quick for us. Okay. Things happened really quick for us. The first, now, just like everybody else probably out there starting their business entrepreneurial journey, I got to tell you, man, I had the spreadsheet set up and it's like, man, we're going to get 1,000 subscribers, because those first 50 people, I said, hey, look, you guys pay us $1,000 and that's it. Now, the next model is like, hey, look, you're going to pay us $1,000 and then $97 a month.
Right.
And I had it modeled out, man. I knew that I was going to be filthy rich, man, if I could just get 1,000 people to pay me $97 a month, right?
Right.
Super simple business plan, right? Just go get 1,000 people to pay you $97 a month.
On the surface.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it took a little while. It did take a little while. That first year was super tough because we didn't really have a product. And frankly, man, I was doing credit repair on the side because I was a mortgage guy in the background. Mm. So I knew how to read credit reports. And so I actually went out and created the Credit Coach. Still have that website, thecreditcoach.com. It's still out there. I don't use it. But I hustled, man, and did credit repair on the side, coached people how to get their credit back in shape to pay my bills. And then about 18 months into it, man, Robert Kiyosaki's group found us, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yep.
And that was like gasoline, dude. Like, I mean, it was like, that was the match, gasoline all at once. We had intended on launching individual markets because another huge component to our software back then was a networking component for your local market. So kind of like a RIA, but virtually. So this before meetups and stuff like that, you know, and we knew that that was going to be very hard to just kind of do on a national basis. So we were going to market, you know, individual market was our places was going to be our launch plan, but that pivoted really quick whenever, you know, Kiyosaki's group came in and said, hey, you know, you have the opportunity to sell to all of our students, but they're all over the country. And so we immediately opened up, and that did change the software component. We had to focus a little bit more on the tools, which quite frankly are a lot more of what they are today: websites, CRM, phone systems, things of that nature.
Well, and I think, you know, what I want to dig into and talk to you too, Damon, is the culture that you've created in your
yeah.
In your company, because I think, you know, I've been to your office and just, you know, not even knowing that the first time walking in, right, I was there for another meeting, but just walking in, I was like, this is really cool how you've created this culture. And I think, you know, we were talking a while back too. It's like, yeah, it was really easy to hire to it, but you didn't have certain things in place too to maintain people were actually working, right? And so for the list, what I'm talking about is Damon's created a really, really cool environment, a fun environment where there's pool, ping, like all kinds of games and a great, healthy, fun culture, but I don't want to take the words from you, but yeah. What we were talking about, right? There was things that you learned from that too. So why don't you dig into that?
Yeah.
I think really
how it wasn't always that way, right?
Your culture is really, really amazing in how you've established that and the work that you put into it too.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you, man. I think what I'm most proud of today, I mean, there's a lot of things to be proud of for sure. I mean, you know, there's not many businesses that even make it a decade, right? There's not many that make it 5 years, much less a decade. But what I'm most proud of today, quite frankly, is the culture. And I got to tell you, if I go back into those early days and literally like right when that moment of whenever we basically landed a big contract with Rich Dad, they were going to make us the software of choice for all of their new students. I mean, it was like, boom, overnight. It's always that overnight success that, you know, I really look back as like, well, that was 3 to 4 years of building this damn thing.
Right. Right.
But, I had to go hire people. And so what I did at that time, man, I just did what I know how to do. I was like, okay, well, I got to copy other people. I got to look at other companies and I got to look at what they did. I'm going to replicate that, you know? So I looked at the Googles and the Zapposes, and all of those cool tech companies, if you will. And the mistake that I made, man, straight up was I just copied what I could see from the outside. Was like all the fun environment, right? So we had, you know, this snack bar, we had an open bar, video games, no structure. I mean, no dress code, no set hours, like just come and go as you please. And we got up to about 15 people relatively quickly after we got the Rich Dad contract. And
it was really easy to hire to that, right? Like awesome, fun atmosphere, right?
Yep, 100%. Like everybody wanted to come to work at REI Blackbook. Well, let me rephrase that. Everybody wanted to come to REI Blackbook. What I later discovered is everybody didn't want to come to work.
They just wanted to come hang out and play, eat snacks and play video games.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it got to the point, man. It got to the point where it's like, all right, you know, we were pretty flexible on schedules and everything else. And, you know, my thought was like, hey guys, if you get your work done, like, hey, like, I don't care how long you work. It's like, we just got to get our, we have to have results though. And it quickly became, man, and I always make the joke, man, is like people started coming in at 11 o'clock. They would go take a 2-hour lunch break and then they would leave at 1. And it was like, this ain't working. And I'll never forget, man, at this point in time, it was, we're probably about 3 to 4 years into, so this is probably 2012, making good money, 7 figures. I mean, life is like every box that it was like, man, if we just hit that number, like life is going to be grand. It's like, okay, man, this is, all of those types of things are happening. And I woke up one morning and I looked over at my wife and I'm like, I don't want to go to work today. And she's like, well, don't. Like, you're the boss, right? Like, I mean, you own the company. You right. don't have to go to work. Isn't that the purpose and the point of owning your own company for the freedom? And I'll never forget, because I just looked at it. I was like, you know, the truth of it is, if I don't go to work today, nothing's going to happen. Everything's going to fall apart. Everybody depends upon me for every decision, like, you know, all of this stuff. And was uber frustrated and went to Google and started Googling some stuff. And I found a workshop, a tech company that I had admired was, they were actually hosting a workshop and it was going to be really small. It was going to be like 4 to 5 other business owners with their executive team. And it wasn't inexpensive. I mean, it was 10 grand for 3 days, but I was like, I got to go to this. And I took that one employee, that first guy that I hired, Matt, with me. So I had 15 people on the team and I was like, Matt's the only guy, man, that like, I want to be here with me. Mm-hmm. So we go to the meeting and it was very interesting. I'm sitting there and I'm talking with the CEO of this tech company. And I'm telling him, I'm like, man, like, tell me, I can look at your culture and I look at the vibe. Everybody's happy here. Like, what is it, man? Like, is it this benefit? Is it that feature? Is it da 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 da? Like, what is it that you're doing? And he looked at me, he's like, Damon, it's mission, values, purpose. I'm like, dude, yeah, awesome. Yeah, bull crap. What is it really? And by day 3, he had pounded in my head. He's like, Damon, dude, you have not defined your values. You have no clarity on your vision. You have no idea where the company's going. And you haven't defined any values. So therefore, the folks that you've hired, you've just hired based on their skill set, which is just, that's what I knew to do because I didn't really understand this vision thing. I didn't understand behavioral analysis at that time either, which I've dove into very, very heavily over the last, you know, three to four years. So he kept telling me, he's like, well, like if you would hire Matt, which was the guy with me, you would hire him. And if you had 15 of him, would you love to go to work? I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? We would knock things out. Things would be amazing. Because I know he's the one guy in the office that I never have to ask anything of. He's like, well, like, why don't you think of 3 other people, you know, in the business or in, that you worked with that you'd hire and everything else. And then basically I started identifying ultimately what I recognize now is he was walking me through the exercise to really identify my core values. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we went back and analyzed everybody and said, hey, you know, the truth of it is Matt is like literally the only one here that I have shared values. And so we eventually let everybody go. Now that doesn't, you don't just go back and, you know, at that point, you don't just go back and fire 14 other people, man.
Right. Right.
It was another year to 2 years of slowly migrating folks out. And then it's like, then I got much clearer on the hiring process. And for us, man, I think where most people make this mistake as entrepreneurs, especially if you're a young entrepreneur, and you're just getting started, man. I think most folks just, they're looking to hire the talent. Like I want the most talented developer. I want the most talented sales guy. I want the most, you know, I'm looking for the skill set and the talent. But instead of going to behavioral analysis, which we do it this way now, it's like behavioral analysis. If they don't match our job target behavioral analysis, we don't even interview them. And we personally use Predictive Index for this. There's DISC, there's, you know, Myers-Briggs. I mean, there's a ton of them. Right. We love DISC, or I'm sorry, the Predictive Index, because it's a super simple test, takes less than 5 minutes and super accurate. And what it really does is it tells us who your natural behavior is. And based upon, you know, your dominance, your extroversion, your patience and your formality. And so as an example of that, if I take an accounting role, I know that they have to have a lot of patience and they have to have a lot of formality. Right. And they probably
Yeah. And
yeah, they're the detailed folks.
Right.
When I say this stuff, it's like logical, right? It's like, well, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But yet it's so, I mean, being through that myself, right? It's amazing what you can truly find out.
Well, when we started doing it, even after I started hiring people just based upon value. So I got clear at that day that I had to get really clear on my mission. What's our objective right now? What is the vision? And you know, what is our purpose? Like, why does my business exist? And once we really got clear on that, then we started hiring. Now I noticed that the caliber of people were certainly better. So I had the right people on the team, but I wasn't necessarily putting them on the right seat. So the right seat actually became much clearer whenever I started using the behavioral analysis, right? It's crazy, right? You've got folks that are probably, like, I look at my actual natural profile. I'm a really high A, really high B, which means high dominance and a high extroversion, right? I love this type of stuff. I get up on talking to you. Mm. If I'm talking to 100 people or one person, I gotta have that feed. That feeds right. me every day. But I've got no patience and no formality, right? So I don't want any structure, and I've got no patience. So can you imagine me being a CPA?
As you were saying this, I'm literally, no kidding, I was just like, how the heck did you want to be a CPA? As soon as you said that, I was like, dude, there's no way you would have been a CPA.
It would have driven me crazy doing the same thing, like the same process every single month to close the books and do all that. I know how important it is, right? I mean, I've been in business for a long time. I know how important that role is. But again, John, I think it's really key, because look, I promise you, man, there's so many, think about how many kids are just making that decision without understanding who their natural behavior is. And they're making those career decisions. And that was a really key component for us to start pivoting and saying, okay, we have to define what is the best personality profile to set in this seat. Mm-hmm. And if you don't match that, then I'm not going to put you in it, because anybody can temporarily,
right?
I can focus on details for a small period of time.
Right. It's not like you can't do it. It's just, you know, is it going to, you know, long-term burn you out, or, you know, not,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Do you get real enjoyment from it?
Right.
Right. And this is really important for probably, you know, the entrepreneurs listening to this, real estate investors, entrepreneurs. I don't care if you're selling widgets. I don't care if you're selling software, you know, a service business, you know, the entrepreneurship, man, you got to get really clear on why you want to be that business owner. And what is your, not just your talent, you could be really good at something, but it could burn you out if you don't understand your behavioral profile and what that job target is.
And you've been spending a lot of time on what you refer to as VSP. You want to talk a little bit about that?
I mean, yeah, man.
A little bit about it, but you said, I mean, you've been really kind of digging into that lately. So share with
me. Yeah. So that's been my passion, man, probably for the last 4 or 5 years now at this point. You know, I look back 2012, was like, holy crap, I don't want this business. Started shifting. All of a sudden 2014, 2015, kind of started finding a little bit of the rhythm. A lot of these pieces of the puzzle started falling into place. And then that had people in place so I could step back and think about really the more meaningful stuff. And so for me, I think there's three key components to the success of any business. You have to have the vision, right? Yeah. So if I was drawing this out, I would draw a little circle. Okay, there's the vision. We got to have vision. And I do think there's two types of vision though. And I think you must get both visions very clear. First and foremost is your personal vision.
Yep.
Like, why the hell do you get up every day? Like, and it's really easy for people to say, hey, I'm doing this for my family and stuff like that. But
that's not what we mean when we say, by the way, right? I mean, it is a process to go through that.
Yep. 100%. And I, you know, we kind of walk through that process. I do that with not only myself, but I try to do that with folks on my team as well, because I want to make sure that their personal vision is in alignment with what we want to do as a business and their job role. So the personal vision should tell you really two things. Once you get articulate the personal vision, it should tell you, A, how much money do you need to support that life? Am I going on, you know, a vacation every weekend? Am I going on, you know, a week-long trip twice a year, three times? How much are those trips? Like, literally put a number so that I know, now I should know, how much money does my business really need to produce to live my personal vision?
Yep.
It should also tell you how much time you have to build the business. Now, I want to be clear here. this is not, hey, let's go write out this little perfect life and say that I want $1 million and I really only have 10 hours to build the business, because these are going to be, you know,
they got to match.
Yeah. 100%.
Right.
It's gotta be realistic. Once you do the personal vision, then, and only then should you go build the business vision. And that's really all consists of what's the mission. What are the values of the company and what's the purpose? Why do you exist?
Right.
You know? And so for us at REI Blackbook, at the end of the day, we exist to empower real estate investors, right? We really, truly, we've actually even shifted that to say, we want to empower people. I want to empower the people on my team. I want to empower, you know, partners and folks like you. I want to empower our customers. We want to empower them to really live their personal vision. That's really our objective and our purpose. That's why we get out of bed every single day, right? We do that. So our mission is to simplify real estate investing for 10,000 people, mm-hmm. right? Through systems, software, and education. And we do that because we believe in people before profits, right? We believe in people before profits. We're not a nonprofit organization, by the way. We make money and we believe in making money. We also believe that if you do the right thing for the right reasons, the money just somehow it's just magically appeared for like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Open, honest communication, right? Open, honest communication. You can be very open and very transparent and very direct with your team members and they with you, by the way. If everybody knows that communication is coming from a place of sincerity and love, right? And love for the betterment of the team.
Right.
Dedication to growth, right? Dedication to growth. We lean into failure. Lean into failure just means, hey, look, we know that we're going to make mistakes. We want to move. And especially in the tech world, like innovation is super important. I don't want my guys and or gals to get caught up on they made a mistake or anything else. Like, okay, no, what did we learn from that mistake? What do we learn from that mistake and move forward? And then selfless team players. So once I got really clear on the vision of where we're taking the company, our mission, our values, our purpose, it was really much easier to actually hire the right people. And then, and only then, do you then put in the perks, right? Then we honestly, what we would do is we would set up a goal and we say, hey, if we hit this, then let's go get a pool table.
Yeah.
If we hit this, then let's go do this. And so all those perks then became rewards that everybody worked for. But where I screwed up, John, is if I go back all the way to 2011, 2012, man, I just put the perks in place.
Right.
And I use those as bait to get everybody in the door.
Yeah.
And then I just hired all the wrong people because I didn't understand the job target, like the behavioral analysis. I certainly didn't interview to values. I just was like, hey man, how good are you at coding? Right. How good are you at sales? How good are you at marketing? Like, let's focus on your past performance.
Right.
And the reality is, man, there's a ton of people all over the world, man, that have made the same mistake that I did at age 17. I just said, hey, I'm going to be a CPA and had no idea what my natural behavior was.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that are in professional careers that have had success and they're really good at those things, but they're just miserable.
Right. And it's not just even when we're younger too. I mean, even in our adulthood, right? Because we've just done things to do things and it's not, you haven't sat down and really drafted out what your vision is and what your purpose is and all those things, whether you're an entrepreneur or not.
100%. 100%. Right. The personal vision, I don't care if part of your personal vision should just tell you time and money. Now we're going to say, how much time do I have to go to that job? And how much does that job need to pay me? If you don't, because not everybody's meant to be an entrepreneur, man.
Right.
Yeah. Not everybody's meant to be. So that's the vision component, man. And then when we get to systems, you know, at the end of the day, man, REI Blackbook is a system to help you convert more leads into deals.
Yeah.
But system is much more than REI Blackbook is just a tool. And whenever I look at systems, you got to think of really four key areas, and it's a top-down approach. We got to look at strategy. So what's the whole strategy? What's the intent of this system that if I'm going to look at? What's the tactical? Then we must process map it. And then once you process map it, then you put the tools in place, right? And there are three types of systems that we want to implement in your business, right? The first is you got to have a management system. That's how do you operate your business? What's the cadence? Are we doing annual planning? Are we chunking it down into quarterly planning? Are we doing, weekly meetings? Are we doing monthly team meetings? Like, what's the cadence? Do I have the data? Do I have a scorecard? You know, obviously P&L is great. You know, your P&L is awesome, but you got to have the predictive data. Am I measuring my KPIs? Does every job have every seat on the bus? Does it have a KPI to hold them accountable objectively? Right. So I've got to have a management system in place. We need marketing systems in place. So I got to acquire, convert, and engage customers, because at the end of the day, that's, you know, huge. Right. And then finally, I got to have a money system in place. Right. Mm-hmm. So if I look at vision, I got to have mission, values, purpose. If I look at systems, I have to have management systems. I have to have marketing systems. I have to have money systems in place. And then finally, you go over and you implement the people component. And we like to say we dig people. You got to design the plan. You got to design the plan. What are the seats on the bus? When I think about, you know, the vision and, hey, which, by the way, if you're an entrepreneur, you're not even driving the bus. Most folks think that, oh, I'm the entrepreneur, I got to drive the bus. No, you're the route planner, man. You're the route planner. You need somebody in that operations role to really drive that bus. But then you got to define what are all the sections in the bus. And then within the section, who's going to sit in that marketing team? Who's going to sit in the system or the sales role, the operations role, the accounting, admin, HR, customer support? And so you got to design what that seating chart looks like. Then we got to go hire to it. And then we got to grow the people, right? You got to keep them engaged and inspired, you know, once they're actually on the team. And that's really what I mean by VSP. And you got to have all three as an entrepreneur. If I have vision and systems, if I've got vision and systems, but no people, then basically you're just going to create a job, because
right, you're going to end up doing it all yourself.
Yep. You're basically just replicating created job.
So if inside,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Keep going. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I have systems and people with no vision, then I'm going to have a lot of efficient people because they got systems in place and everything else, but there's still going to be a lack of direction, right? They're going to be unfulfilled people, and you're probably going to have a lot of turnover because, you know, the truth of it is, man, people really, it's not about how much money they make. You know, there's tons of studies that show you about $72,000 and above, most of your basic needs are fulfilled as a human being financially. At the end of the day, man, people want to know they're making a difference.
Right. Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you got a bunch. And if you got vision and people and no systems, then you just got a ton of chaos, man. You know? So vision, systems, people, man, I'm preaching it pretty hardcore lately. Yep. And that's really how we operate REI Black Book.
And inside the vision, you have mission, value, and purpose.
Yep. Right? Okay. Yep. Yeah. I wish I had a little whiteboard. I should have cheated, just brought a whiteboard, but yeah. We just do inside of vision, you got mission, values, purpose. Inside of systems, you have you got management systems, marketing systems, as well as money systems. How do I count the money? How do you know all that?
That falls into the four: strategy, tactical, process, and tools.
Yeah, I've got to have on each one of those, if I go look at a marketing system, I got to then identify, okay, what's the strategy? So if I say, hey, look, I'm gonna look at a system just to generate leads and I'm going to say, okay, my goal is to go and find motivated sellers. That's the objective. And now I'm going to say, okay, what's my strategy? So what's the strategy to do that? So I need to start figuring out, you know, the geographic, psychographics, demographics of the target audience. Then I'm going to pick a tactic. So tactically, I might pick pay-per-click, right? Pay-per-click advertising. Then I have to process map all of that out. I got to exactly what's the journey. So as soon as they see the ad, they click on the ad, what happens? Do they go to my landing page? What happens when they fill out they call me, they fill out the form, what happens? I got to process map the journey. And then and only then do I pick a tool to help automate and delegate and manage that particular system. And frankly, John, the reason that I got into all of this is because we've had the tools to do all of this, right? To help you automate, delegate, and manage that pay-per-click marketing campaign.
Yep.
But the truth of it is, if you don't understand as a business owner and you just come in and you start throwing stuff against the wall and you don't really step back and look at the vision, systems, and people and how this all really plays together, then you're just waking up and that's the constant, you know, chaos and the firefighting and jumping from problem to problem to problem and not really being able to proactively manage your business and have the consistency and persistency, you know, and consistent paychecks at the end of the day, predictability, right?
Well, man, I think we could do a whole nother episode on digging into this. So we've been going for almost 40 minutes now. So I appreciate your time, but that's been awesome. Like there's just a ton of stuff in here, and I hope people that are listening Damon runs a phenomenal business, very successful. And, you can hear your passion around the things that you've implemented and what's made you successful because you have done things right that we thought was going to work, and you just kind of throwing spaghetti against the wall, but really digging into someone that's as successful as you've been and really starting to continue to dig into your VSP and how important that is. I mean, I think everybody, in my opinion, got something out of this call today. So I really want to appreciate you being on. And Damon, is there any way that people can reach out to you or understand more about REI Black Book if they're in real estate space and kind of what you offer to? I mean, I'd like to kind of, provide feedback for people to reach out to you as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they can go check out REIBlackbook.com. I will say, John, this has been a huge, huge passion of mine. And again, if you keep in mind my purpose, which is to empower people, yeah. I recognize now that just giving them the tool is almost dangerous. So now that's why I'm really on a mission to really start teaching the VSP. That's and awesome. So there'll probably be some workshops and stuff like that announced here very, very soon around that. So we can dive deeper into every one of those individual topics. But yeah, go check out REIBlackbook.com. Go check out our blog. I promise you we'll have more in-depth information on any of these things. And always Facebook as well. So happy to connect and chat with folks.
All right, buddy. Well, I really appreciate your time and your insight and just for the knowledge that you shared today and the value. So again, I appreciate you being on here, buddy. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate the opportunity, John.
All right, buddy. We'll talk soon.